Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Welcome to the Dog Pod, your home for all fans of the University of Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm here with Law Dog, ready for the 2022 season and the dawn of the Kalen DeBoer era. Kent State's coming to town. Law Dog, we got to talk about it.
I cannot wait for Kent State to arrive in the magic rows of Husky Stadium, BT.
It's this season, something feels special about it. One of those kind of nowhere to go but up seasons. And definitely the hype train is full. And I want a first-class ticket. Hey, so the new-look Huskies kick things off officially. Talk to me about this coaching staff and the type of offense we should expect to see. What do you think this year?
Yeah, well, this has been, you know, one of those issues. It's a bugaboo. If you go back and listen to our podcast of the last 5-6 years, BT, right, we're always kind of, you know, coming up with these gripes about the offense. And ever since basically John Ross and Dante Pettis and Jake Browning were all on the field together, it's just been kind of slowly going downhill. And I think that probably played a little bit into what Jen Cohen's hiring decision was going to be. When she brought in DeBoer, she wanted somebody who was more of an offensive mind, you know, and DeBoer is a guy who's had great offensive success, including last season at Fresno State. So who does he bring with him? He brings with him the guy who succeeded him as offensive coordinator at Indiana, Nick Sheridan. He brings with him his offensive coordinator at Fresno, Ryan Grubb. And a guy named Jamarcus Shepard, who was co-offensive coordinator at Purdue. And between, you know, all those guys have had experience as coordinators at the D1 level. And, you know, I think that they like to open it up, spread it around, and you know, this is going to be a modernized Husky offense. And I think that's kind of the music to the ears of Husky fans ever right now is, you know, just modernize this offense, get into the 21st century, the RPOs, you know, spreading it around. And so I think that's what we're going to be looking for from them, especially, you know, in these first few weeks. It's going to be hopefully a breath of fresh air.
Running, yeah, mesh routes, just a whole bunch. This isn't run the damn ball hat. And, you know, I think it's hard not to get on the hype train, but here we were 2 years ago saying, well, I hope he knows something we don't.
About, you know, John Donovan.
About John Donovan. That all we had, and we said these exact words on the podcast, the only thing we had was blind faith. It was, there's no evidence, you know, and this, I think everything you talked about here, a lot of evidence to get excited about. So
yeah, and I mean, you look at what Fresno did last year. They beat UCLA in the Rose Bowl. They took Oregon to the wire.
Yep.
You know, this, and that was with a Fresno State, you know, roster. And so I think you look at the personnel that they've got, especially when you go with the wideouts, McMillan and Rome, you've got a veteran offensive line, and now you got a quarterback. They've named Michael Penix the starter, who's got a lot of experience, including in the Big Ten. And, you know, I think, I'm not going to say the sky's the limit, but certainly I think there's good reason to believe that this is going to be a much improved offensive unit compared to the last couple of years, if not the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, hey, let's break down those units then. Talk to me about them. The depth charts came out, some surprises and probably some highlights and concerns that weren't surprising to us, but things that we've been thinking about all summer.
Well, okay, so I'll start with the up front, and I'll work my way back and outside, right? I think we looked at that offensive line last season, and I think if you listen to our season preview last year, we were excited about all these guys coming back, right? Now we do have a 6th year Jackson Kirkland at left tackle to anchor that line. He won't be out there on Saturday because he's serving a suspension, but you know, you've got a really veteran offensive line. Kalen DeBoer got there, and you know, basically said, Scott Huff, you're my guy, and retained him on staff. I think that says to me that last year, you know, what the weaknesses that this offensive line was showing, I think what he's saying there is, I don't think that was Scott Huff's mistake. I think that was a schematic issue with Donovan's offense. You know, that's what he's saying in my mind by retaining Huff. So I think we should see some improvement there. We're going to see a few new names cycling in there. Miles Morrow, I believe, is going to be on the field. Kaleppo is going to be on the field. So we're going to see a couple of new guys. Victor Kern's been, I think, pushed into the background, right? Luciano, Bonavallo, Rosengarten. So I think that this has a chance to have a good improvement in the first year of the DeBoer era and the whatever it's going to be, the sixth or seventh year of the Scott Huff era.
Things are going to look a little different Saturday, though, because without Jackson Kirkland, you've got to shift people around. And I think this isn't going to be what you see with the rest of the year, but injuries are going to happen. So there's going to be shifting.
They're going to have to get some new guys on the field. But I do think I think the other thing that we haven't talked a whole lot about, but I've been actually really impressed with what I've seen out of Ron McKeefrey, the strength and conditioning coach. Mm-hmm. So I have to believe that I think this offensive line is going to at least take a little bit of a step forward this year. I think last year was kind of a worst case scenario almost. The Huskies mm-hmm. really could not run the ball. The pass pro was okay. Dylan Morris, I think, with some happy feet last year, this offense just never really got rolling. I think that that's going to be the key, is to just get them, you know, rolling, get them on, get some protection for Penix, and, you know, open some holes for this new stable running back. So let's move there. This running backs group, I think last year we were kind of hoping that one of these guys would take the mantle. And, you know, between what you had with Cam Davis, Richard Newton, some of the guys that were coming back, nobody really took this job and ran with it last year. So they hit the transfer portal super hard, this coaching staff did. And Wayne Taualapapa from Virginia. I mean, I've looked at some of his highlights out of the ACC. I think he's gonna be a nice addition to this running backs room. And they basically named him the starter, that he's the bell cow. And then Will Nixon coming in to be the backup. And then basically, by all accounts, it's Sam Adams Jr., who's the third back. And so none of the guys who saw the field last year, not to mention, I mean, the guys who graduated like McGrew, but none of the guys who were retained from last year are basically in line to get any carries, basically. And then there's also Aaron Dumas from California that they picked up. So, you know, I think that this is one of the great unknowns of this offense, right? Last year, it was a big weakness. The coaches hit it hard in the portal. And so now we kind of Saturday, that's going to be the one thing I'm really looking forward to seeing on Saturday, just seeing, you know, who's going to get the carries and how they look, because last year the running game was abysmal. There's just nowhere to go but up, like you said at the top of the show. So I'm really excited to see what they can do.
I'll be curious with that if Wayne Taualapapa ends up being that next generation of what we've seen in the past. Miles Gaskin, Chris Polk, Bishop Sankey, we have had that bell cow running back. And I don't know if we haven't the last couple of years because we, by design, McGrew would flash in moments. Richard Newton would have one or two games with a hammer, but would then absolutely couldn't find a hole or fall forward for more than a yard or two in some games. And you just didn't have the standout.
Right. And nobody got those kind of carries that Gaskin was getting, that Chris Polk had gotten. And I think that was a sign, right? We were always wondering, like, okay, is it the sign? Is it a sign that they have too many guys, or is it a sign they don't have enough? And I think you go look at the results last year and you say, they didn't have enough. They didn't have a guy. I mean, we kind of were hoping Cam Davis would be that guy, and I think he probably will get some opportunities. He'll probably get more opportunities than anybody else who was on last year's roster. But, I mean, he's got a lot of guys ahead of him now, and I don't think it's any certainty that he's going to be, afforded a lot of opportunities. Okay, moving on to receivers. I think we can all agree this is going to be the strength of the offensive side of the ball, right? Jalen McMillan, Roman Dunze. In fact, you know, DeBoer mentioned in his press conference, on Monday, saying, who can take the top off the defense? And he, without hesitation, said Rome, or was that Grubb who said that? But in any case, you know, I think that they're looking at Rome and Jalen as being guys who can stretch a defense and can open up this offense for everybody else. And then a little bit of a surprise is Taj Davis was named as a starter at that third receiver spot. He's a guy who showed well last year in limited time, but he beat out guys like, you know, Jalen Polk, Giles Jackson. Definitely a lot of talent in that room. And then there's the transfer junior Alexander in there as well. So this is one area on the offense that I'm excited. I'm really excited to see. And then, you know, you move over to tight end, and I think that that's a little bit more uncertain. Devin Culp, I think he's, by all accounts, going to be the main starter. Jack Westover, we know, is going to get a lot of playing time. But then there were a couple of transfers out of that room. So the depth isn't necessarily what you'd want it to be. Culp has shown really well when he's had certain opportunities, but he's had a couple of high-profile drops. Mm-hmm. So you'd like to just see him get in a rhythm and get going and have, you know, a big day in one of these first 2 weeks against kind of a second-tier opponent to get that confidence going a little bit.
Westover is more of the utility knife that can you line up an H-back. You can do a lot of different things as well. But
yeah, I think we'll see plenty of him. But I think by all accounts, this staff is not going to rely heavily on the tight end, right? They're going to spread the ball more out wide, get the ball to their running backs in space. You know, they really want to open things up. So I think the tight end, you know, is and I think that's why you saw some transfers from this spot, right? I don't know that we're going to see a Cade Otton. Who's going to be, you know, somebody who's a star in that role. And then finally, turn to the quarterbacks. I mean, I think that's where all the focus has been in the offseason. Michael Penix Jr. was named the starter officially last week. I think that wasn't a huge surprise to anybody. I think I was a little surprised that they came out and said, no, Dylan Morris is absolutely going to take the first snap if Penix can't get on the field. I thought that was... I don't know why they're doing that either. And to me, it just, that was like almost kind of a nudge on Sam Heward, right? Like, you're not there. So, you know,
is that motivating him or trying to keep Dylan around? I don't know. It's, and you look, you have to think a lot about it. Cause you know, I think the tape on Michael Penix looks pretty amazing, but he still hasn't finished a season.
Yeah. And I think that's why this backup role and the depth that we have there is going to be really important. I mean, so critical. That said, you know, he had some great games in the Big Ten, right? Obviously, there was that big win at Michigan State they had. They almost pulled off an upset against Ohio State. And, you know, and his injuries have been, I don't want to call them freakish, but I mean, like a couple of shoulder injuries, you know, that's not like, hey, you're a running quarterback and you know, you get your knee, you know, chopped down below you on a tackle or something like that on a running play. I mean, he's had a couple of freakish injuries, so who knows? I am excited to see him just kind of open it up. And honestly, just the fact that he knows the DeBoer playbook, he knows how to run this offense. I think the comfort level that they had with him made the decision for them. And so now we can just see what this offense is going to look like with a guy who's run it before. We don't need to sit here at, you know, on next week's show and say, oh, well, this is his first week, like we were doing with Dylan Morris all the time, you know, handling it with kid gloves. Penix, I think, can be judged on the merits. He knows, you know, this offense, and he knows what is expected of him. So I'm really anxious to see them on the field this Saturday. That is one thing that I have not been able to shake my excitement about. It's just, let's see this offense and let's see a modern offense play in the Husky Stadium field for once.
Yeah, love it. I'm excited about it. These other quarterbacks are going to get some time this year at some point. And, you know, you'd like to see Dylan Morris take a step forward and Sam Heward erase that Apple Cup memory. Anything else on the offense?
Yeah, I think just one thing on Sam Heward. I mean, I think, you know, everyone's hoping. You look around the country and you see a guy like Caleb Williams, right, who's a five-star, who's immediately a starter, transfers to USC, is immediately a starter. Everyone's kind of looking around going, okay, Sam Heward, this is your, you know, second year in the program. Where are you? Why aren't you winning this job? I think we need to be a little bit patient with him. You know, I'm not saying I'm not saying there's zero chance that he's going to end up being a bust. I think this was an opportunity for him to win the job, but he still is only, he's going to be a redshirt freshman this season with minimal game experience. And I know we want him to be the future, but he's got to earn the job. And frankly, you just have to put the best guy on the field.
I'm less worried about him losing patience with us. I'm worried about, I'm concerned he's going to end up transferring at some point if he doesn't see where, there's a future for him here.
Yeah.
But I can't disagree with having Michael Penix start. I'm really excited to see Wayne Tualapapa. I had a chance to spend a little bit of time this summer with Roma Dunze. Just amazing. Such a bright, young student athlete, and head on his shoulders. And I think he's going to go out and do amazing, amazing things. So really looking forward to seeing this offense. Should we get into the defense?
Let's do it.
All right. So defense, this is all new look, and boy, it really has to be. You have Chuck Morrell and William Inge coming over with Coach DeBoer as co-defensive coordinators. Inge serving as linebackers coach, Morrell coaching safeties. They both come from Fresno State, so out of this DeBoer coaching tree, right? Coach Inge also coached at Indiana, Morrell at Sioux Falls. Just a long history of both. Really, you look at the defense and offense. Scott Huff is one of the only coaches of name. Really, who's in the program, who's retained. All these guys are coming up with Coach DeBoer. Last year, we have to go through it. The Dogs finished 108th against the run. Montana, Michigan, even wins against Arizona. We made your running back highlight reel. Last year. 4.5 yards a carry by running backs in Pac-12 play that we gave up. Unreal.
So much of that, BT, was the fact that they have insisted on playing two down linemen and two deep safeties, and then basically blaming after the game, hey, our guys aren't making run fits. It's like you're not putting enough guys on the line.
Yeah, 100%. Look, you look at the pass defense and some statistical categories, they finished first in the country, and you can say, well, look, that's because the run was open, so why pass? But I also think, they were 79th in the country in pass completion, and they weren't getting a lot of turnovers, 69th in picks. So it was truly, as you just talked about, bend, don't break, right? Bend, don't break. Giving up, tiny short passes over the top and underneath as needed, and 4.5 yards a carry. And that's, how we never had the ball. We couldn't maintain possession and couldn't get the ball back. We have to get better. From a scheme perspective, we're going to use a 4-2-5 like just about everybody else. They do have a position they bring from Fresno called the Husky. Kid Fresno, just this hybrid nickel linebacker position who covers slot receivers, but also has to be ready to blitz and kind of help run defense wherever is needed. And we'll get into this spoiler alert. Dom Hampton is perfect for this. Expect him to blitz a ton. So much more pressure than past years. Last year, Fresno State, they racked up 90 tackles for loss and 31 sacks. So I think it'll be, from a fan's perspective, it's going to be really exciting versus the bend, don't break. So let's talk about personnel a little bit. Let's start up front. Edge rushers, so critical in this defense. Jeremiah Martin with Savelle Smalls backing up on one side, and then ZTF and Braylon Trice listed as co-starters on the other side. And if maybe that was a little bit of a surprise, if you look at the depth chart, for my 2 cents, ZTF, Trice, Martin, those are your studs. Jeremiah Martin, 6'4", 250-pound transfer from Texas A&M. I thought it was pretty cool. He's now a captain. So it seems like he's just found his home at Washington. ZTF, as we know, absolute freak, capable of being an elite player. We were 2020. He was just all everything. Second team All-American, national leader in sacks per game, 2021, the injury-plagued year. Savelle Smalls, boy, I'm one of the most coveted recruits in the last 4 years of Husky recruiting. He was number 12 overall in the nation. And what an absolute physical specimen who I think he would say the same thing. He just hasn't lived up to his billing yet. But from what we hear, a fire is lit underneath him. He had a good camp and should get some touches this year. I would love to see that hometown kid really live up to the billing. Now, looking at the big tackles up front, on one side, MJ Ale, the converted O-lineman, the questions for him all around the injury, he was carted off the field 3 weeks ago, and all intents, I'm sure they're not putting him out there lightly, but it's a concern. He dropped 22 pounds in the offseason. So much is expected from him. And Jacob Bandis, and Kowal Popa are a pair of 300 pounders. They could see time as well. the other big dog starter, Tuli Tulitulugasanoa, 6'1", 307-pound junior, and backing him up, Voitunufatuitutele, the sophomores. They'll probably see a little bit of action as well. So Coach Inoki Brechterfield, he comes from a year at Vandy and preceded by that 6 years in Madison, where he oversaw very strong defensive line play in Madison. Again, one of the few who didn't come as part of that DeBoer coaching tree, but I think really strong ties to the Polynesian community and a lot of respect for him as a defensive line coach. He should have the guys ready up front. Linebacker play, he just has to improve, especially against the run. This is Coach Inge's group. So let's see what he has here. The starters are Cam Bright and Alfonso Tupatala. Senior Cam Bright, no surprise, but Tupatala, I think, that surprised a little bit that he was named. But this has to be based on what he did over camp. I expect to see some time from the hard-hitting Daniel Hamuli. Look, there's talk he's in the right position more often than not. If you think, remember Hamuli last year, the problem with him was just over-pursuit. You know, so aggressive, and it would end up in the wrong spot. Carson Bruner had some really strong games, so he'll play time as well. And we picked up Chris Mall from Miami, who I think should get some time as well. But that linebacker core, my goodness, it has to get better. And
you didn't mention Carson Bruner, who really had a nice couple of games, especially towards the end of last season. And I thought he showed really well. And you didn't mention Ulofosio.
Yeah, Ulofosio is the last piece on there. This is all big asterisks here, is the injury to Eddie Ulofosio. You'd feel so much better if he was there.
Yeah, no, and I think I mean, like we talked about, right? Is it all on the linebackers? You know, obviously they didn't play up to their potential last year, and they, you know, made changes to adjust for that. And Bruner got some time as a freshman. But I also think I've been leaning on this for a couple of years now. I just think the scheme has not been doing them any favors.
Agreed. That's not
helpful. And so I'm anxious to see what they do with a 4-man defensive line in front of them. I am anxious to see that. And Dom Hampton, who's a guy who can really hit, can really tackle, helping them out. So I'm expecting some improvement there. I think where I'm concerned is looking behind them is we've had that death row secondary for several years, 6-7 years now.
Let's get into that. And I think you're right on the linebackers. It's unfair to put that on the linebackers if running backs are hitting them with 7-8 yards full speed at first contact. What are they supposed to do at that point? We talked about that Husky position. That's Dom Hampton. Name's all over it, right? Dom was in the doghouse with Coach Lake for what? I don't know, whatever reason, where he'd get pulled out of games and things. And
well, he had a bad penalty in that Michigan game. Like we never saw him after that.
I get it. Like, I understand there's probably other things in context happening, but it was tough. And Cam Fab, the sophomore, he'll back him up in that Husky position. But I'm excited to see him slot into that spot. The corners. Okay, these are coached by Julius Brown, who came over part of that DeBoer coaching tree from Fresno. Michelle Powell and the UC Davis transfer, Jordan Perryman, are going to start. So popping right in there with that UC Davis transfer as a starter. I think you expect to see Dyson McCutcheon just see a little bit of time. Safeties, Alex Cook and Asa Turner. I feel like Asa Turner, another one like Savelle Smalls, what a hugely coveted recruit, total physical specimen, and a lot is expected of him this year. You'll probably see Cam Williams and Julius Irving get some time as well. And look, this is co-defensive coordinator Chuck Morrell's group, right? So he should really have these guys going. Look, we've been doing this podcast for years, and every year I say, like, I have the same episode every year, and I go, hey, look what we lost in the secondary. But I'm not worried. Like, why should we? Because every year we reload. And this is a year that I'm like, I'm a little worried. I mean, Kyler Gordon, Trent McDuffie, Brandon Redley Hiles were just studs last year. Maybe the best in the country. Those are big, big losses. And we don't have that next group. I think Michelle Powell has shown strong. You look at Jordan Perryman's tape from UC Davis, you should feel good, but
You're right. Covington, that was the big, I mean, he was going to be the next one of those big guys, right?
Right.
And he transferred to SC, I believe. And with him and Powell, I would have felt like, okay, maybe Death Row's got another year here, but I think Perryman is definitely a little bit of an unknown. And also, I mean, the safety play has not been the same since that Rose Bowl season, I think we can say as well. I think maybe that's why they've been playing a little deeper. you know, keep the game in front of them, so to speak. Turner's had his moments. Cook has been solid, but we just haven't had a star on the back, like the back out of safety since maybe Taylor Rapp. And so, and that's a position that, you know, we've recruited pretty well with guys like four stars, like Turner and Irvin, but it's like nobody's, you know, Cam Williams, but nobody's really stepped up and made it, you know, owned that position. So that is something I think, you know, hopefully this new coaching staff can kind of, you know, reconfigure this and get these guys on track.
Look, and this is Chuck Morrell is back there. And there's a reason he's co-DC. I think there's probably there's an NFL player or two in that mix. I don't know who it's going to be, but this is the first year where I've said
we don't have three NFL players.
That's right. That's right. We probably don't have three. And this is the first year where it just concerns me. And I hope that this new scheme is something, you know, with this, you know, Ben getting away from the bend don't break and being a little bit more aggressive up front. That's great. But then you're asking more of your secondary as well when you're blitzing, right? So let's see how they respond.
You know, just one more point on up front is I actually think this defense up front, which has I think been a bugaboo for the last couple seasons, I actually think they're going to be much improved. And you went through the reasons why, right? I think Latuli Gassanoa, I mean, he's the next one in that long line of guys from Vea to Greg Gaines to Anwazurike. I mean, I think he's going to have a big year. We were looking forward to having Taki Taimani beside him again, you know, who transfers to Oregon, which is like a dagger. But I do think they're moving Ally, and the fact that he's switching positions and he missed at least a week, if not 2 weeks at camp because of an injury, and they're plugging him in as a starter. They believe in him.
Yep.
So I think that's a great sign. And also, you know, you touched on it, but ZTF, having him back and healthy for a full season, and you know, nobody has talked enough about, I think, Demetrius Martin. I think he's been, or Jeremiah Martin, sorry. He's been solid. He's been very solid, and I think he's itching for an opportunity. I expect big things from this defensive line. I think we're going to have a good season up front.
I love it. I hope so. And I still think with the transfer portal, losing Taki Taimani hurts. You know, losing, we've lost a few within the Pac-12 that have hurt.
Bynum.
Jason Bynum.
Yeah.
But the all up, I actually really like, if you look at Wayne, Wayne Tualapapa, you know, let's see what Cam he does.
Bright.
Cam Bright. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah.
I think we've done well.
They've done well in attacking the portal. I think that's what we're going to – I mean, you know, obviously this is, you know, a college football that you and I did not grow up with. And it's upon us now. And, you know, I think, you know, you have to show these guys that you're an attractive place to come. You have to – the recruiting doesn't stop just when they commit or even when they sign somewhere else, because you might see them again. So – you know, we have to hit the portal hard. We're gonna take losses from the portal at times. But I mean, Michael Penix, I mean, can you imagine if we were doing the show right now and saying, hey, Dylan Morris is gonna be the starter one more season? I don't know if I'd be able to take it,
honestly. Oh, it's just too much. Like, the hairline is already struggling enough here with these podcasts. Like,
the grays are starting to show.
I don't know if I could do another year. We're just going in blindly with that. Well, look, I think that's the defense. I just am so excited for this fresh blood that's coming in and a fresh look to the defense. And I'm going to be glued to my seat at the kickoff of Kent State. Quick on special teams. Punter's a little bit interesting. Kevin Ryan, the senior transfer from Idaho State, who was presumed to be like the job's his. You have a freshman walk-on, Jack McAllister, are battling for the punter spot, which I think is going to be really interesting. Peyton Henry, you know, stalwart, comes back with kicks. And then you've got Giles Jackson, who is a specialist at, you know, Michigan specialist for us as well, who I think can be quite strong in the return game as well. But, you know, let's hope that there's some continuity in the improvements that we saw in special teams after some dip.
I think that special teams is one area where you can look and just go that there's so much coaching there. Not only from decisions of putting starters into those roles versus putting backups, but just how you coach those guys up, it really shows. And that's going to be one thing where it's like, you know, nobody was really watching it maybe in the spring game. Nobody's really writing about it or paying attention to it in fall camp. But if it's if there are breakdowns on special teams against Kent State, we are going to notice and we're going to be talking about it. And so I think that that's one of those areas that this is a new coaching staff, but it's a really, you know, one thing we didn't say is these guys really know how to coach. I mean, DeBoer has been successful everywhere he's been. Everywhere he's been, he's had success in whatever his role has been, whether it's handling an offense or when he was nearly undefeated as a coach in NAIA, right? But all the guys that he's bringing along with him, they have a lot of experience. And I think you look around at Jimmy Lake's staff, and that was one of those areas where it's like, okay, you're going to hire John Donovan. Okay, you're going to promote Bob Gregory. It just felt like nobody was necessarily qualified for the role they were in by the end of it. You looked around at the staff and we're just going, wow. So I do put a lot of faith in what they're doing. And I think they're going to have this thing turned around. I don't think we're going to be talking about a 4-8 season.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I'm really excited for it. So this Saturday, Kent State comes to town. They played in the MAC championship. And made a bowl this year, a rare bowl appearance for them, lost both of those games, but pretty strong offensive firepower, 500 yards a game. Although this year, new quarterback, two great returning running backs, the offensive line is a complete rewrite. 7:30 p.m. On Fox Sport Network, UW is a 23.5-point favorite with Kent State coming to town for this rare opening Labor Day weekend night game. What do you say?
Yeah, so I think you look at last season with Kent State, they were in the top 10 in the nation in yards gained, total offense. They were in the top 30 in scoring offense. So they weren't necessarily converting into points as efficiently, but they moved the ball on people. I mean, a top five in the nation. But then you look at the defense, and by almost every metric, they were in the bottom 10 in the nation. So, you know, when you say, oh, they've got to rebuild their offensive line, and I noticed they were picked to win their division in the MAC yet again going into this season. So I think by the MAC standards, everyone's expecting them to do quite well. But I think I look at that and I go, okay, well, what did they do well last season? They moved the ball. And if they have to retool their entire offensive line, I don't know that that's necessarily – you know, a great thing. So I think, again, that's an opportunity for this Husky defensive line to say, okay, this is a rookie offensive line from the MAC conference. Like, let's go wreak some havoc.
And I think if the Huskies aren't quarterback.
Yep. Yeah. And I think if the Huskies aren't getting pressure and disrupting them on that side of the ball, then that's going to be a bad sign. And then conversely, you know, this is a defense that wasn't stopping anybody last year. And so if you're not able to move the ball, so yeah, the Huskies should be 23-point favorites in this game at home on opening day, even with the new coaching staff and some new personnel. And I think, you know, based on the home opener we suffered through last season, we'll take any kind of win.
Oh, 100%. And the sting of that, I think, is still so fresh that I don't believe anyone in the building is taking them lightly.
Coach Kalen DeBoer, you're saying, oh, really? I'm going to put on this Montana tape on Monday of the Kent State week and say, oh, let's see how we came out of the gate last year. I don't know. I wasn't here, guys. How did it look?
How did
I put on the tape?
You have a lot of players, a lot of starters who remember what that felt like.
I think they should not be lacking for motivation, and they should have more talent on the field, even despite all of the personnel changes that they've gone through. So I am anxious to see how it goes. You know, these things are judged on a curve, right? You know, we'll sit here and we'll be happy and we'll take any win we can get. But I mean, in the end, you know, this team isn't going to go places if you can't put away a team like Kent State. And I think I would have said the same thing last year against Montana. You've got to put away Montana, not just beat them. And in the end, you know, we didn't either.
That's right. And I think by the end of the season, and he looked back, it all made sense. And he just thought, like, the culture of the team had completely fallen apart. You didn't have the right coaches. You didn't have the right offense. You didn't have the right defense. And it all made sense, you know, capped off with what the Apple Cup was. I mean, it all just kind of made sense. But I think we feel good about it coming into this game. I'm excited about this season. You know, it's not the greatest home schedule from a Pac-12 conference play perspective. You know, we don't get the Apple Cup. We don't get Oregon. We don't have a USC coming to town. We don't have a Utah coming to town. So there isn't those big marquee games. But we do get Michigan State in a couple weeks, which I think we'll be talking about. It's going to be a nice marquee game. And we get Stanford at home in the month of September. There's going to be some fun games. A couple Friday night games. We're playing at UCLA. I'll send out some information via Twitter, but we've got discounted tickets in the Rose Bowl for fans of the podcast that we'll send out sitting with us. We've got 35 of us, I want to say, sitting together, nice seats in the Rose Bowl around 25, where row 25, where, you know, look, say what you will about being bitter about UCLA and USC. And I still want to go see that game. You know, I don't know when we're going to be in the Rose Bowl again at a home in a game against UCLA. I want to go see it. So we'll be down there. And then a Friday night Oregon State game. So there's some fun on the schedule.
I have some good memories in the Rose Bowl, BT, including being forcibly removed from the stadium in 2009 and missing the fourth quarter due to intoxication.
This is not on the Dog Pod highlight reel.
It's not on the highlight reel. It's just a personal. It's just a personal memory that for those who were there, they remember.
Oh, that's right up there at the top there with assaulting a hemlock fir in the tailgate parking lot.
Yeah, I've thrown some temper tantrums over the years.
Hey, you know, this team does it to us, but they pay us back. I mean, I've been there. Let me shoot, not like the for a pair of Rose Bowls, but you know, seeing the games at UCLA or the UCLA games, I think are a great time because you can get great seats for you know, it's wide open seating there. But I think it's going to be nice, and why not see it again? Because we just don't know when it's going to happen.
Well, it's a great time of year, October, to go down there. One year I went to the Breeders' Cup after we had gone to the game at the Rose Bowl. So it I mean, you know, LA is always fun.
It'll be a great time.
I'm going to miss those trips.
But Pac-12 play starts out this week, though. Thursday night, 7 p.m., Pac-12 Network, ASU hosting Northern Arizona, and ASU favored by 25.5.
I'm gonna take Directional Arizona University, BT.
Directional Arizona University to cover. What do you think about this? Is the more interesting question here is Herm Edwards finishes the season or not? What would you say?
It's so tough because the NCAA, you know, if they drop a serious hammer on them, and I'm hearing it both ways, right? You know, you're hearing on the one hand, the NCAA is largely in the process of kind of deregulating. Then you hear on the other hand, well, no, Edwards was like directly involved with some of these recruiting violations. So it's like you can't necessarily let him go. So, I mean, if they drop a hammer in the middle of the season, I think ASU is probably going to, it could potentially even fire him for cause at that point, right? So they may just be waiting for that. And so, yeah, I think it's impossible to lay the numbers. I will personally say I believe he'll be the coach by the end of the year, and I believe he'll be fired prior to the Pac-12 championship game.
Wow. And I think they're going to be an interesting team to watch because they surprise people over the years. I'm excited to see what Emory Jones does as a transfer quarterback for them. And Xavier Valade, the running back, I think is really strong. They've got some players, but I'd agree. If you're going to take anything, you want some action on that. It's probably the cover. Friday night game. This one got interesting. So this is Colorado hosts TCU, 7 p.m. in Boulder on ESPN. Horned Frogs are favored. Started off at 10. It's pushed to 14. TCU still coming off a 5-7 season. I don't know. What do you think?
And it's tough for me to, and this is in Colorado.
Yeah.
It's tough for me, but 14 point dogs at home. I'm going to go with the Buffs, but I mean, it's tough for me to get excited about them for anything. I just think that I think the program's totally a mess. Carl Durrell, not a great decision. So I'll take him in this one, but I cannot feel good about it. Even with the movement on the line,
it's tough. And I think, you know, it's a tough skill position losses and got hammered pretty hard outbound on the transfer portal. Not a ton of faith in Brendan Lewis as a quarterback. I think it's going to be tough, but 14 at home, I don't know. It's pushed to a point where this isn't a TCU of their glory years. You know, this is a 5-7 team. Saturday starts off super early, 11:30 a.m. Bowling Green at UCLA. Scheduled to hit 100 degrees in Pasadena.
I saw that
day. It is going to be freaking hot. Bruins favored by 23.5. Bowling Green just 5 wins last year, but they did upset Minnesota in a road game last year.
Boy, this is I'm not going to call it an early test, but I mean, UCLA is kind of one of those. I wouldn't call them a sleeper either, but they're a trendy kind of pick to kind of come out of what used to be the South. man, 23 points. You know what? Just give me the Bruins. I don't think much of Bowling Green.
Yeah, and DTR, I mean, it seems like he's been playing for, fifth, sixth year. Zach Charbonnet, he's really sharp. Maybe top two, top three running back.
I mean, they had a pretty good team last year, and they returned most of it. I think they're going to be tough. I don't expect the Huskies to win down there, actually, at the game you guys are going to. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's always been a tough place for us to play, and that's going to be a tough game. So, yeah, I definitely think that this UCLA team is solid.
Yeah. I think they are as well. Zona plays at San Diego State, 12:30 on CBS. Aztecs are favored by 5.5. They beat the Wildcats 38-10 in Tucson last year. They also took out Utah in triple overtime on their way to a 12-2 season. San Diego State home game, Aztecs favored by 5.5. What do you say?
Yeah, I'm on the Aztecs on that one. I hate to say it. I do think Arizona is going to be improved. I think the days of them being literally the doormat of the conference are probably over. Jed Fish doing a really nice job, especially recruiting. And you know, they played us tough last year, which isn't saying that much. But I think they just showed a lot more fight last year. I think they're going to be improved. I don't think they're improved enough to win a game like this on the road against a Mountain West team. It is tough to do that. The fans, they just have this game circled on their calendar, right, to show up the Pac-12. So I think it's going to be a tough one.
They've had our number. I'm really excited to see Jaden DeLora at Arizona and what he does transferring from Wazoo. Love Jacob Cowing, probably top three receiver in the Pac-12.
I can't wait to boo DeLora when he gets to Husky Stadium. BT. Husky
Stadium. Hey, still a Coug to us, bud, just as an FYI.
Once a Coug, always a Coug.
Always a Coug. One of the big ones, 12:30. I'm excited to watch this at the tailgate. We're going to be posted up early and watching this one. Oregon at Georgia, ABC, UGA favored by 16.5.
Man, 16.5 is tough. I mean, look, that defense last year, I've never watched a defense and been like, that defense could have played with the 91 Husky defense. But that defense last year is pretty damn close. And they looked phenomenal. Now, I know they've lost a lot of guys, but they've recruited like crazy. They're going to reload. I do expect them to win the game. 16.5 is a lot. I'd probably take the Ducks on that, but again, I don't feel great about it.
I'd agree with you, and I think maybe that number's being pulled in that direction just based on what George has done, what they returned. But at the same time, like what Oregon did in Columbus last year to open the season.
They're a tough out, and their roster is very well stocked with blue chip guys, and they've improved a quarterback, I think, with Bo Nix, even though he's, you know, maybe not the SEC's like greatest quarterback of all time. I think that's an upgrade over what they had last year, and I expect them to be tougher.
And do you, and the expectation, say Dan Lanning, he can coach well against his former team. He should be able to prep his guys going in to this game against Georgia. It's a big line. Here's another one that is not going to get as many viewers. Cal hosts UC Davis at 1 p.m. on the Pac-12 network. Cal Golden Bears favored by 21.
I mean, just woof. I don't know what else to say about this. Like, do I have to watch? Thankfully, I don't. I'm going to take UC Davis because screw Cal. Whatever.
They have put up some stinkers in the past to open up the season. I don't know the first thing about UC Davis. The other big one, this one, gosh, I hope we can get the satellite working for this one at the tailgate. Utah travels to Gainesville, Florida, 4 p.m. on ESPN. Utes favored by 4. Florida coming off a 6-7 season. This one is big for the Pack.
I get Florida as a home dog. I do respect Utah. I think that they are probably likely get they would be my pick to win the Pac-12 this season. I think that they have the best roster. I think that they've got the experience now. I expect them to do a lot of damage, but geez, on the road in the SEC, that's tough. I think I might have to take the Gators and the points there.
I'll take the other side of that. I get a little bit more faith in Utah. I don't think this is a strong Florida team, as we've seen in past years. And I think they're also going to come in a little bit stronger with the right personnel. I'm really hopeful. I think, look, if Georgia beats Oregon by a couple of touchdowns, expected, right? Mm-hmm. If Florida hammers Utah, and Utah is a real trendy playoff pick, it's a real bad look for the conference.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
But we'll see. Here's another snooze one. Stanford hosts Colgate 7 p.m. Good luck finding that on TV. Stanford, 41.5-point favorite. That's going to be the only time that they're a favorite by that much.
I wasn't even aware Colgate played Division I football, as I'm sure UC Davis doesn't either. I'll take a 41-point line. Give me the toothpaste, BT.
Let's take the toothpaste. I think Stanford, if you come to Stanford with like any type of like super high achieving academic credentials, they'll just put you on the schedule and then hope you can fill the football team at some point. So you end up getting these teams like Colgate. Wazoo hosts Idaho State 6:30 on Pac-12 Network. The Cougs by 28. Can they get over their case of the week one yips that they've had in the past?
Well, that was a Mike Leach thing. I don't think it hasn't always been there. I also think Idaho State, terrible. They're going to win the game. I'm give me the Cougs. I'll take the Cougs, even with laying 28 points there. But I just want to make this point. I think a lot of people are picking the Cougs. It's like a trendy pick, to make a run in the conference. I think that is like way off. I'm not seeing it. They never play defense. They're not going to play defense this year. And let's just stop talking about that right now. Go ahead and beat Idaho State by 4 touchdowns and get the hype train rolling. Get into the top 25 for the Apple Cup, whatever you need to do. But we are going to go down there and plant the fucking flag in Martin Stadium and take back the Apple Cup to its rightful home, BT.
I like that. There's a preview for Thanksgiving weekend for your listeners out there. Last one, Oregon State hosts Boise State 7:30. Beavs favored by 3. Listen, maybe not the national spotlight of the Oregon, Georgia, Florida, Utah, but this is one the Pac-12 would like to win as well.
Yeah, contrary to what I just said about Wazoo, I actually do think Jonathan Smith's doing a nice job at Oregon State. I think they're going to be a tough out this season and in future seasons. I think he got a lot of grief when he was the OC at UW, and I think that we look back on that and say, you know what, that was really misplaced. Give me the Beavs in this one, and I do like them to have like a 7-8 win season, I think.
Yeah, there's some stuff I like about them. A lot of experience, a quarterback with Chance Nolan, pair of running backs, Damian Martinez, Deshaun Fenwick, I think look really good. I think they're going to put up some points that they can pull the defense together enough. I don't know enough about this year's Boise State team to be able to make a decision on this either way. I just think it's one of those ones that, you can sort of scoff at San Diego State beating Arizona because it's, San Diego State is a 12-win team last year. This is one of these ones that the Beavs are supposed to be an up-and-coming Pac-12 team. They should win this game.
Yep. Yeah, and I think Boise State has been trending a little bit down. I think their name is kind of exceeding their actual talent at this point. I just don't think they've been the same kind of force that they were in the Mountain West at one time. So this one's in Corvallis. Give me the Beavs on this one.
Love it. Hey, exciting opening week of Washington football, Pac-12 football. We're going to be there at Husky Stadium, 7:30. Be in the seats early on. Get loud. I think let's show Coach DeBoer all of the new players here. What Husky Stadium is made of. It's going to be tough. It's Kent State, but this is still opening weekend. It's going to be a nice sunny day. Let's get out there and cheer on those Huskies, huh?
I mean, BT, I can't wait. And I mean, they're selling booze in Husky Stadium now, so there's no excuses not to be there.
What more? What more do you want? What more do you? I'm offering you a $12 Modelo can. What more do you want from me in this life?
I couldn't ask for anything more. I won't.
That's all you're going to get. Well, hey, let's get a W this weekend. Let's have a little bit of fun and cheer on those dogs. Go dogs, huh?
Go dogs. Oof.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Washington State University.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Oregon and Stanford.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.